Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Cancer Horizons podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, and healthcare professionals to do what CURE does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. Micah Bernstein wants everyone to know that there is so much more to her than cancer. Diagnosed with cancer at 15 months and free of cancer for 8 years, Micah is an 11-year-old, three-time survivor of neuroblastoma. We first spoke with Micah in 2018 when she was 7 years old.
At first, I was really scared, but soon I warmed to the people in the hospital and the treatments I got, and it was something unexpected, and I didn't know what would happen. I just went along with it, because no matter how much pain the medicines cause, they will help you no matter what.
And decided to catch up with her and her father on the final day of Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. In this episode of Cancer Horizons, Micah and Jeff update the CURE audience on Micah's cancer journey since 2018, discuss how the childhood cancer space has changed in the past 10 years, their ongoing advocacy efforts, and partnering with the St. Baldrick's Foundation to raise over $100,000 for neuroblastoma awareness and research.
We were able to provide a grant to a researcher specifically who happened to be focused on neuroblastoma research.
While Micah continues to use her voice to help other kids with cancer, she also hopes to carve an identity for herself outside of cancer.
At least for a lot of people, cancer doesn't define us.
As a normalish kid who eats junk food, plays clarinet, and is even working on a novel. She shares tips for dealing with fears of cancer recurrence.
Shut up, brain. Go back to what you're doing. If necessary, just call your friends and talk about random memes you saw on YouTube until your phone's on.
What she wishes people knew about childhood cancer survivors, and more.
Micah, when we last spoke in 2018, you were in second grade and you were a four-year survivor of neuroblastoma. Would you like to update us on your cancer journey and anything else that's been going on in the last 4 years?
I'm now cancer-free for 8 years. I was actually diagnosed about 10 years ago. There's that. My pronouns have changed since then, and I've started playing the clarinet.
So. Very cool. In terms of cancer, what role would you say it plays in your life?
I don't really know what kind of a role it plays in my life, because there's the fact that it's had, like, long-lasting effects on me. Also, like, if I didn't have cancer, like, I wouldn't have met some of my friends. I have some amazing friends at camp, and it's a cancer camp, so, like, okay. If I didn't have cancer, I wouldn't know them.
So you mentioned that cancer camp. So what is the name of that camp, and do you still go to it?
I actually go to two. One of them is called Camp Bridge of the Sky. It's run by an organization known as OAK. Mm-hmm. People there are amazing. Mm-hmm. And you also go to Camp Ronald McDonald for Good Times. People there are equally amazing.
It's also fair to say that so we've transitioned from having routine or more routine oncology visits to Micah has more routine visits with other specialists to follow up on long-term effects.
Jeff, what about you? Do you feel like cancer still plays in your life? Like, I would love to know, are you still in the communities, like any caregiver communities, anything like that? What role does it play in your life now?
I'd say it still plays an ongoing role. My wife and I are both involved in advocacy efforts trying to raise the profile of childhood cancer and the need for newer, better, safer treatments for kids who are facing disease like Micah did. So in September, we try and do even more during Childhood Cancer Awareness Month whenever we can.
We actually used to do a presentation together in front of my classes about childhood cancer. I've been doing it alone last year and this year.
My wife and I have also been engaged in a process where we can review grants or grant applications for researchers who are looking at novel treatments for cancer. So I think Micah's cancer has changed our lives in that way. That's just going to be an ongoing part of our lives for the foreseeable future in a good way, since it's.
He's also been part of a social media group for cancer parents, and this actually happened relatively recently. Sometimes new cancer parents will reach out, and that'll be like, okay, yeah, insert tip here, insert tip here.
Sure, we do. People do reach out. It's a tight-knit community in some ways. So when people reach out with my child was just diagnosed with neuroblastoma, you know, what can you tell us? What tips do you have? The further away we get from Micah's treatment and initial diagnosis, we have a little less current information, but I think some of it's kind of evergreen, how to handle a new diagnosis. One other thing, which we've been doing it for seven years now. We participate in St. Baldrick's fundraising and shaving. So although I've succumbed to nature and bald most of the time.
We could have kept growing it out. He would just have a massive bald spot.
I gave into nature and a lot of it's gone, but we do every year. We do head shaving. Yeah, at least I do head shaving. Micah has gone back and forth.
Yeah, because it makes my hair slightly weaker every time it grows back, and between genetics and chemo, my hair's already damaged enough that I really want to try and grow it out.
Could you tell me more about your fundraising efforts, Micah?
The rest of the family does it too, including some of our family in non-San Diego. A lot of our family's in LA, so we've been printing out flyers every year, and I just go around handing them out. Last year, I actually just took a few flyers out of my stack. I was just going around before school started during zero period, just placing them on the tables outside of classrooms.
And it's been kind of nice because the shaves, at least pre-COVID, involved Micah and sometimes Micah's brother and myself and my dad. So we had multiple generations in our family all shaving and certainly all fundraising.
And we had some amazing friends who joined in 2019.
And we had some friends who have been doing it all along with us, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I'd have to look up the total, but I know we either are close to or just over $100,000 that we've raised over the years.
Wow. As a team. And how many years have you been doing this?
I think I'm at 8 years now. And as part of our fundraising, too, we set up a fund sort of within the St. Baldrick's framework. So when we reached a certain threshold, we were able to provide a grant to a researcher specifically who happened to be focused on neuroblastoma research and also happened to be named Micah.
Yeah, it
was a really nice fit to be able to specifically support a researcher working on the same disease that Micah had faced.
That last time you spoke, you mentioned wanting to become a doctor with your best friend, Nolan.
It's just, I want to help people who would follow my immunization path. And also, I want to stick with my best friend, Nolan. He and I are both going to medical school. Well, when we get older. We're only in second grade.
Is that a path that you're still interested in pursuing, or is there something different that you're interested in now?
I mean, it keeps changing, sadly. Nolan happened to move to Germany. He is coming back, though. So, that's good. But, I want to pursue a career more in, literature. I'm actually writing a novel right now. I have kind of a plan. Hopefully, if it becomes successful enough, I'm actually taking inspiration from a lot of successful authors who write genres that I really loved. They were the people who inspired me to start writing. Hopefully, if I become at least relatively successful with my writing, I can, advocate for stuff. I always make sure to include characters from minorities. One of the first characters I came up with was, I originally came up with a duo with, it was three characters. One of them was, just straight. One of them was, transgender male, and one of them was, non-binary. And I make it my goal to, in my writing, not include, oh my gosh, we're such a strong gay character. It's just oh yeah, that guy's gay. It's cool.
Very good. Very cool. Very cool. So what genre did you say that this novel that you're working on is? Can you tell us a little bit about what the novel is about?
I don't know what the genre technically is, but it's adventure fantasy. Some of the ones I took inspiration from were the Winds of Fire series by Jimmy Sutherland, Keeper of the Lost Cities by Shannon Messenger, obviously Rick Riordan's mythology series.
How important would both of you say awareness of childhood cancer is, especially neuroblastoma? Do you, Micah, feel like people understand with patients, what patients of neuroblastoma, and for you, Jeff, like caregivers of patients with neuroblastoma have to go through? Do you feel like it's a cancer that gets enough attention?
Like, a lot of people that I know from school and other circles that aren't from cancer organizations don't really understand it because, like, good for them, they haven't had cancer or had to go through this. But, like, neuroblastoma, while it does hold a special, whatever that may mean, place in my life, it deserves just as much awareness and funding and other cancers.
Mm-hmm.
So, childhood cancer and cancer in general, like, they kill a lot of people and it's terrible and they deserve more awareness than they get.
Okay, very good.
I think neuroblastoma specifically, you know, it's not as well known as some of the other childhood cancers out there, and that's, I mean, partially because of numbers. If there are fewer neuroblastoma cases diagnosed every year than there are, for example, leukemias. And that's nothing, you know, not a commentary on leukemia or patients who are dealing with leukemia. It's just a fact of the numbers. So I think it's important for people who maybe haven't been immersed in this world to better understand that there are a number of different types of cancer out there, and they're all different, and they don't involve the same type of treatment, they don't involve the same survival rates. That's cancer isn't just one thing. Childhood cancer is not just one thing. So I think that's the important takeaway for folks outside sort of the childhood cancer world to understand.
And also, Jeff, in your last interview, you mentioned how important clinical trials were to Micah's treatment. What would you say to people who might be in a similar situation or have loved ones who are in a similar situation who are hesitant to participate in clinical trials or just maybe feel like it's not an option for them?
I can't say it's always an option, but I think it's always worth looking to see if it's an option, even if it's not something that's been proactively presented to you. It may just be that it's something new that your team hasn't yet become familiar with. There are a lot of trials out there, and I'm sure not every doctor knows every single trial. But I think they are really important. They serve a valuable purpose in providing additional options for patients who either think they may not have an option, a particular option, or a good enough option, or just that there might be a better option out there. It's the way we always looked at it was we always wanted to have the largest number of tools sort of in our toolbox available for trying to treat Micah. And clinical trials were a big part of that, making sure that toolbox was as full as possible.
Yeah, to add on to that message from a child, because people pay attention to children, clinical trials weren't exactly fun. I mean, like, no medicine is. I only remember consenting, like, because the rest of them I was too young for, to one, but I mean, I was pretty young, like that was around the time you interviewed me the first time, so I didn't have that much judgment. But also, like, even if I did have as much knowledge and judgment as I did today, I would have agreed with, you know, without more than like maybe 30 seconds tops of hesitation, because as Dad said, we want there to be as many options for treatment and survival for other patients as there possibly can be. And if taking disgusting medicine every so often can help that, then I mean, I'll do it. The pills didn't taste that bad, by the way. It was mostly just the foods I could eat.
And I think another piece of it is, at least the way we viewed it and the way I hope a lot of people view it, is if you're in the middle of a fight like this, that if you can play a part in helping the next family, the next patient that's diagnosed, have more options, better options, help the scientific teams learn what works best while also being treated, that's a hopefully a win-win. You know, it benefits everybody.
You heard about your clinical trials. Was it doctors telling you, or was it internet research? Do you have any tips to anybody who feels like they're not accessible to them?
So it was, I think for us, it was a combination of everything. Early on, it was certainly, you know, informed by our medical team, by Micah's medical team. But we pretty quickly learned that There's a centralized clinical trials database and website, I believe maintained by NIH. It's clinicaltrials.gov, if I'm not mistaken. So we learn about trials through there. And we would also, over time, you know, get to know other families that join, whether it's, you know, a Facebook group or other communities of cancer families and cancer parents who share information. So over time, we get to learn about treatment or clinical trials that way and to share information on them, too. The community tends to share information, at least their particular stories and what might be available that they know about that others may not have heard about yet.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So being a part of a community can really help people discover clinical trials. Micah, what is something that you wish people might know about childhood cancer survivors?
At least for a lot of people, cancer doesn't define us. And, like, while it's cool that you're, like, asking us about cancer and stuff, like, it's always good to raise awareness, please stop doing it all the time. I would say normal, but I'm not normal, and I'm proud of that person. Like, I'm normal. I'm normalish. Like, too much snack food. I practice the clarinet.
I think part of it from a parent perspective is the whole goal of going through Micah's treatment was to get to a point where cancer didn't have to define her. So that, yes, it was and I'm sure always will be an important sort of formative part of her life, but the goal was to be able to move past it and let it be as much or as little a part of her life as she wants it to be.
I think that's to approach it. So, Jeff, you and your family have been navigating the cancer space either as a caregiver or, in Micah's case, a patient, or as an advocate in the past 10 years. How would you say that things have changed since then, either from a medical perspective or from a community organizing perspective? What are any changes that you felt like you've encountered?
So, changes I've seen kind of most directly affecting Micah was, and going back to your question about clinical trials is one of the medicines that Micah or treatments that Micah received at multiple points during her treatment was a clinical trial when Micah was first diagnosed. And by the time she ended her treatment, it was approved. It was an FDA approved drug that's more widely available.
What medication is that?
It's called Unituxin.
Okay.
At the time Micah was on it initially, it was just known as, CH1418, if I remember the number correctly. So that was a noticeable change. In fact, it was announced that it got FDA approval during one of Micah's treatments using that exact drug.
And to the best of my knowledge, that was the one that was funded by St. Baldrick's, right?
It was funded in part by St. Baldrick's, good call.
Because they're the best.
And other changes... I've seen, so we, early on in kind of our advocacy journey, one of the rallying cries, the hashtags, the goals was more than 4% was the amount of the National Cancer Institute budget in the U.S. that was specifically devoted to childhood cancers. And actually I had learned just earlier this year that's increased over the last several years. And now it's closer to 8%. Which is pretty impressive that it's doubled, and my understanding is, you know, that's due in no small part to advocacy efforts from, you know, not just parents, but, you know, the community as a whole. And that's a really positive change. There's always room for improvement. I'd love to see it higher, but I will happily acknowledge that it's doubled in the years that we've been involved in this, and that's really encouraging to see. I think those are the two biggest changes, you know, the specific changes I can point to.
Speaking about the last 10 years, do you feel like the internet and social media has played a bigger role in cancer support groups and also in just ways for patients with cancer and their loved ones to be able to find resources?
Social media has been one of the largest ways we have in our own efforts to reach out to the community, to undertake that advocacy, you know, outside of the cancer world. So using social media has been a big factor in that, along with our fundraising efforts. And then again, finding those communities of cancer parents, of cancer survivors, of just the wider cancer community. I think the social media has played a big role in connecting people to those stories and resources and questions and support that they might not have in their own geographic community or in their own family, even. I think it's been super, super helpful in connecting people to the resources they need.
The cancer journey was thankfully a few years ago, but like now you are dealing with, and I'm sure Michael, you might be dealing with that fear that you have of cancer recurrence or just that anxiety. What would you say motivates you to get through those moments of stress?
One of the long-lasting effects of a cancer diagnosis on your child is every time something out of the ordinary does crop up, like, say, something unknown in their jaw, unfortunately, you know, the first suspicion, or at least among the top suspicions, is, oh, is it back? Is it something related to cancer? But I think that does count as kind of a long-lasting effect for my wife and I. Right? Anytime something out of the ordinary comes up with Micah or with Micah's brother, we're going to at least wonder if there is some role for cancer or cancer treatment in Micah's case. I think that's just going to be the way we look at things for the rest of our lives.
I mean, like, I have lost a couple of friends to cancer after they were clear for a while and then relapsed. So, like, sometimes, especially on their birthdays or the anniversaries of their passing, if I feel out of the ordinary, my thoughts, at least a corner of them, are like, oh my god, am I relapsing? Is it going to happen to me? Please, no. But pretty much, like, I just shove them to the back of my mind, throw them in a hole, lock them away, and if necessary, play my clarinet as loud as possible to draw them out. But that's one of the reasons why I surround myself with so much stuff. Like, I don't know if it's, like, something with me or if it's just a natural thing or whatever, but sometimes I feel like I just have to be doing something, so that really helps if I ever get scared about cancer. I'm just like, okay, I'm in the middle of doing this. Shut up, brain. Go back to what you're doing. If necessary, just call your friends and talk about random memes you saw on YouTube until your phone died. Yes, from a weird child.
It's a hard question because there I don't know if there's a right answer or a right answer for everybody, but at least personally, what I try and do is just remind myself that Mike has been clear for a number of years now, and some of the guidance we've received is the longer Mike is clear, the lower the chance is of a relapse, a return.
Yeah, our oncologist said pretty much, yeah, you've reached 5-year survivorship mark until she's old and her immune system has a problem. She'll very likely be completely fine unless it's something not related to cancer, like she trips and falls on her face or something.
You know, it's a real fear. It does crop up, and it crops up on those occasions when we see that another kid who has been clear for quite some time has a relapse. Unfortunately, it does happen, or that a secondary cancer shows up, and those are scary. I think the best we can do, best I try to do, is remind myself that is at least currently not Micah's situation. And while we don't bury our heads in the sand, we don't, you know, ignore the possibility that it could happen. We try and focus on what we do know about Micah's current situation, which is that she is as healthy as she can be and that we don't have any reason to suspect there has been a relapse. And that kind of has to be good enough in terms of how we process those moments of fear or uncertainty.
Is there anything else you want to share?
I just want to say this. A lot of people think hospitals are scary. Like, they can be scary. The surgery that I went through, not recently, but, like, sort of recently, like, in the beginning of 2020, it was scary to me, seeing as how someone was literally just poking around in my face. But I don't know if this is just because, like, some of my earliest memories are in the hospital, but if you're spending time there, like, this is going to sound weird, hospitals can be sort of fun. Like, at least the hospitals that I went to, like, they had TVs, there were snacks. There were, when I wasn't confined to the bed, there were playrooms in some of the treatment areas that I was in. And the nurses, seeing as how it is part of their job, but also because a lot of them are really nice people, are super nice. So, if you or your child or your family member, especially if they're a child, like a kid facing childhood cancer, like going to a children's hospital and stuff, if they're going to be impatient. I mean, you should be scared for them. It's a completely natural thing, and it's dangerous. But at least help them enjoy what they can at the hospital. My parents and our other family and some friends were pretty great.
Thank you again so much for meeting with me.
Thank you.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cancer Horizons podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcast. The Cancer Horizons podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter @cure_magazine or at Facebook @curemagazine.